Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. We've got a great episode for you today. We thought we were going to be talking about the end of the finals, but the Cavs staved off elimination in Game 4, so we will recap Games 2, 3, and 4. We will also talk a lot about the NBA Draft, as it is coming up in less than 2 weeks. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes. We'd love it if you subscribed, downloaded, left some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports. So check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Zach Harper at Talk Hoops is writing for us this year. A lot of great dispatches from the finals from him. We've also ramped up draft coverage, free agency, lots of off-season talk already. So follow FanRag Sports on Twitter for all of that. As always this week, joining me is my co-host Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian.
Good to hear. Our third normal co-host, Sarah Chalea, could not join us today. She is busy with this thing called work, which is just still a foreign concept to us. So in her place, we have a special guest, the one, the only, Meet Me in Temecula, James Hollis. James, how's it going?
You two motherfuckers. I have been politely inquiring about why I haven't been on the show for like 5 years now. Finally, you make me get up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. And I learn I'm only on because Sarah had to work. Oh,
that is true. It's been long awaited debut of James Hollis on the NBA Pod. But James, we appreciate you joining us. Tell our listeners where they can find your work and where they can follow you on Twitter.
Well, thanks for having me on, but I think I might leave because I just wanted to come talk to Sarah. I didn't want to talk to you.
I can sympathize.
Yeah. So on Twitter, Snotty Drippin, homage to the great Scottie Pippen. So just move a couple letters around and you got Snotty Drippin. And I'm over at B-Ball Breakdown with these guys. And I'm kind of on the Almighty Baller radio network where I haven't recorded in a long time. So I'm slacking. But yeah, check out the Truth Podcast there. And that's about it.
Good stuff. Yeah, give James a follow. He does great work for B-Ball Breakdown as well as the ABPN. So give him a follow all around. Guys, let's talk about the finals first before we head to the draft. Last time we talked more, it was right after game one. You know, we already asked the question if the series was over. Game two did nothing to change that perception. You know, the Warriors did not turn the ball over four times. They turned it over 20, but they still routed the Cavs. So 2-0. At that point, you know, the 16-0 conversation begins in earnest as they head back to Cleveland. So game three, let's talk about that first, because the Cavs, you know, their role players wake up. J.R. Smith actually hits an occasional shot. The Cavs have a 6-point lead with 3 minutes and 9 seconds left. And then the Warriors do their Warriors thing, go on an 11-0 run to end the game. Kevin Durant hits one of the most ice cold 3-pointers you're ever going to see in an NBA Finals game to give them the lead. And then Kyrie Irving, after playing a brilliant game, decides to go straight into ISO ball and, you know, isolates for 20 seconds against Klay Thompson before firing a step back three that wildly clangs off the rim. So, James, after game three, did you think there was any chance the Cavs were coming back and responding in game four? Or did you think that was going to be the straw that broke their back?
I mean, LeBron James is among the greatest of all times. Their season's on the line. They've been embarrassed. So there's definitely a chance, you know, they're at home. They don't want to be embarrassed again and just, you know, be a victim of the 4-0 sweep. So I give them a chance. I had the feeling that this was the game that they're going to win and it's going to be over on Monday. If they win Monday now, that things get interesting then, because now the pressure's squarely on Golden State. But sure, I give them a chance. When you have LeBron James, you always have a chance in a single game.
Yeah, right. That's a reasonable take. Mort, what did you think about the Cavs' late game meltdown in game three? Was it bad coaching? Was it just Kyrie going wild? What happened there?
Well, Kyrie going wild is one thing. It's also just the dynamic of the Golden State Warriors' presence. I mean, they were just so competent in closing out the game. You had like you alluded to, like Kevin Durant coming down doing the pull-up three, which is an instant iconic finals moment. Like, remember back in the day when we thought a pull-up three was a bad shot? Not anymore, right? it was a combination of things. I didn't really have the biggest problem with Kyrie overall. He was trying to create something out of nothing. We have to keep in mind that the Warriors' defense is still exceptional. So mm-hmm. he had to use his ball handling magic, which he does have, to create something, and Klay just did a hell of a job.
Yeah. I mean, Coach Nick of B-Ball Breakdown had a video on Twitter, I think Friday, where he highlighted those two end of game possessions. And it was like, as you said, Mort, it was not just, you know, Kyrie wasn't just freelancing. Like, it was the Warriors. LeBron tells J.R. Smith to set a screen. Iggy blows that up. And then at that point, no one on the floor is moving. So that's where I'm thinking about bad coaching. Like, well, you know, someone just cut or like make the Warriors defense shuffle around a little bit. It was just those four guys standing in place. And then Kyrie has to create. And as you said, Klay did a phenomenal job. Like, Kyrie is one of the best ball handlers, if not the best in the league. You know, he blows by guys all the time. So the fact Klay stayed in front of him and forced a tough contested three was impressive. But, you know, to be honest, I thought at that point, I thought the series was over and I thought it was going to end Friday night. Cause I just thought, you know, that was such a demoralizing way to lose that I thought Golden State at that point, now, you know, they're one win away from the first 16-0 run through the postseason ever. I thought they were going to come out Friday night and blow the Cavs off the floor. Instead, the Cavs score an NBA Finals record, 50 points in the first quarter? It seems like every single thing they throw up is going in. And a lot of these are not good shots in Game 4 on Friday. But, you know, home crowd magic, J.R. Smith getting a good night's sleep. I don't know what it was, but it was an amazing performance offensively for the Cavs. So they end up winning the game 137 to 116. Unreal.
Real quick on Irving and his ISO shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
We can't praise him for 2016 and hitting the shot over Steph and then killing for this one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of what he does. So, I know you guys aren't really ripping him for it, but that's a lot of people, you know, making fun of him. What is Irving doing? Well, I mean, come on. He did it last year, and he was the hero, so you can't kill him for it this year.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, it's worth noting, in Game 3, he had 38 points. You know, it's not like he played a bad game. It's just like, that's going to be the lasting imprint of that game because, you know, he had the ball in his hands in the final minute, and it was a bad time to have. I mean, it was frankly an offensive breakdown of the whole team, but it was a bad time for that to happen.
Right.
So, yeah, Game 4, the Cavs hit an NBA Finals record, 24 three-pointers. I mean, it was just, like, one of the most incredible offensive performances, I would say, in Finals history, given the team that they're going up against. I think, you know, the highlight, of course, is LeBron James throwing an alley-oop to himself in the third quarter. It also gets a little chippy. There was some confusion about a technical foul awarded. It looked like Draymond Green had gotten ejected, and then it turned out there was some confusion about who the foul was allocated to, so he did not get ejected. A Cleveland fan courtside, on the other hand, did get ejected, became a local legend because he started shaking hands with everyone on the way out. So, again, an amazing performance from the Cavs in Game 4. So now we are back exactly where we were in last year's finals. The Warriors are heading home for Game 5, up 3-1. This time, Draymond did not get ejected for Game 5. And this time, they have Kevin Durant. So, two big positives. But, James, do you think, was Game 4 the start of, you know, the new comeback? Should the Warriors be worried about 3-1 jokes? Or were they just delaying the inevitable?
I mean, it has to be there in the back of their mind. It has to be. And it's amazing to me that we're back to 3-1 again. And jokes can kind of start up again. But, no, the addition to Kevin Durant, you know, you swap out 9 points a game or wherever he was averaging for, you know, Durant averaging 34 a game, and it's a whole different mathematical equation. So I can't imagine. What is the statistical probability of LeBron James and his team coming back from back-to-back 3-1 deficits? That has to be like the equivalent of the Earth getting hit by Halley's Comet, right? It has to be right. So it blows my mind to think about it. But if anyone could do it, I guess it'd be led by LeBron James. And I said, begin the series. He can figure out a way to pull this off. I'm gonna just put him in the category. All time. Michael Jordan's my guy. I grew up watching Mike. That whole discussion was kind of stupid for years, but LeBron James in the last few years has earned that conversation. And if he somehow pulls off this series, which I doubt he will, right? I think there's like a less than probably 1% chance that they do it. But if he does it, greatest of all.
Yeah, I agree with that. Morton, I have a feeling that might cut a little closer to home for our once Bulls fan.
I agree entirely. Like, look, I love Mike. He's my guy as well. Grew up watching him. Look, James, you'll appreciate this. My son's middle name is Jeffrey because of Mike. So,
wow.
Yeah, I'm just saying. So obviously, for me, Mike is the greatest of all time. But I've come to realize during all these debates that it's really all subjective. Like, you can't. If a guy thinks that LeBron is the best ever, you know, by all means. If someone thinks Mike is the best great ever, fine. And you know, you have guys who thinks that Kareem is the best of all time, and I can't really argue because Kareem had a fantastic career. So you know, it's at this point, it's just all about personal preference and subjective, you know, feelings towards this and that. And LeBron most certainly is in that category. I think Seth Partnout said it best a couple years back when he said you shouldn't really rate players like 1, 2, 3. You should put them in tiers instead. And LeBron is in that upper tier now, like the highest tier that is. So, and for me,
that take is not hot enough, dude. That take is not hot enough. So Seth Part now, no, we are going to rank players, Seth. I don't want to hear your nuanced take.
Yeah, we don't do the Skip Bayless thing too much here. I'm going to offer another lukewarm take right now, and I want to go. You know, now that we're on the Michael LeBron thing, I want to go back to Game 3 for a sec because LeBron caught a lot of heat for some reason from the Skip Baylesses of the world. You know, toward the end of Game 3, LeBron passed to Kyle Korver, who was open on the wing for a three-pointer. Kyle Korver missed it. You know, obviously, they went on to lose the game. And then, naturally, the MJ conversation started. It was like, well, MJ would have taken that shot. Yeah, right, exactly. Like, MJ would have shot it over. And, you know, LeBron is like, he's got Draymond Green and Kevin Durant between him and the rim. So, you know, two of the best defensive players in the league, long-armed guys, tough shot. And yeah, maybe Mike would have taken that shot and maybe Mike would have made that shot. But at the same time, it's a percentage play, right? Like, who do you trust more in that situation? A wide open Kyle Korver, one of the best shooters in the league? Or, you know, do you challenge two guys, defensive stalwarts, who are, you know, right in position to challenge your shot and make it hard? So that's the thing that drives me crazy about the MJ Mike conversation is, like, these guys are just built differently. Like, LeBron has always had it. He's always preferred to make that extra pass, whereas that was something MJ had to learn to do over the course of his career. And once he finally started doing it, that's when he started winning all of the rings. But it's a percentage play. He knows, like, look, I could make this shot. There's a, you know, 25-30% chance that I hit this shot, but Kyle Korver is a 45% shooter on the wing, probably a lot higher when he's wide open. You know, it's he's just playing the math game here. So I just think the whole, I like the LeBron MJ debate just because I like having it with smart people because there's nuance involved. But Twitter has been a disaster. I'm glad that LeBron avoided a sweep in Game 4.
I either want to see a complete comeback by the Cavs or I wanted to see the historic Golden State sweep. No in between. So if Golden State wins Monday, I'm pissed off altogether.
I wanted to see perfection too for that reason. But if it if it came at the expense of, you know, people then saying, well, LeBron got swept to the finals twice. He can't be anywhere as good as Jordan. Like, Kobe's better.
Then oh, God, that's the one that kills me, though.
Like, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, I was going to say, we're talking about greatest of all times, and yeah, you can think Mike, you can think, you know, Kareem. When people try to throw Kobe in there is what really pisses me off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no disrespect to Kobe. Top 10.
I have Kobe, like, in top 12. He's just outside my top 10. So I think he is that tier removed from being in that conversation. Like, I get that people just fell in love with Kobe because he emulated Mike a lot. And a lot of those people who loved Mike, who got into, like, the second generation of Mike, and I put that in quotation marks, but, you know, they just dug Kobe's style instead of his substance. And then when LeBron came on the scene and was clearly the better player, it was like, nah, Kobe was better because he reminded me of Mike. It's all about South Park and member berries, right? I mean, right. It's really about that. But yeah, can we just also point out one thing? Because we all talk about, like, Mike would have shot that and all that, but let's go back to, like, Game 5 in 1991 in the finals against Los Angeles. Mike's on the bench with Phil, and Phil is asking him, like, who's open? Mike doesn't answer. Who's open? Paxson. Then get him the damn ball. And then Mike started passing to John Paxson, who closed out the game. Like, so this ideology that Mike would always take the last shot in whatever scenario humanly possible is wrong. It's not accurate. He did give up, you know, he passed up better shots to, or passed up shots to get a better shot from someone else. Like, on a, you know, a routinely level. He didn't do it all the time as much as LeBron does, but so what? Like you said, Brian, it's a percentage play. Mike did pass to open shooters, and we have this ideology now that Mike, he just took every damn shot regardless of how hardly contested it was, and that's just a faulty premise. That isn't true. So
now, I'm going to play devil's advocate, though. I mean, the basketball that we watch is entertainment, and I do like, look, I've come not full circle on Kobe, but I've probably turned about 60, 70 degrees on Kobe because it's entertainment, and you know what? It's fun watching him shoot contested fadeaways over three people. It is. It's not a good shot. There's better shots available. Yeah. And I can critique him after he does it and misses because you can say, well, Powell's wide open in the basket, whatever. You can do that. But it's fun. It's part of the myth, the mythos that we weave around these players. And LeBron has plenty of his own mythos, right? He's hit some really tough shots. He had that step back three last night. He can, you know, the turnaround mid-range is becoming a weapon of his. So, it's silly to think that LeBron is, you know, quote unquote, scared of the moment.
Yeah.
And him making the smart play is him making the smart play. But to the people who want to see him take that shot because he's the guy, I can't really fault him because, I mean, hey, again, it's all about entertainment. And we want to see our great players do great things. And like, remember how disappointed we were in James Harden, the way he flamed out in San Antonio? Mm-hmm. He just kind of went down, you know, very meekly. He was passing the ball and stuff. That's not what we want. We don't want to see that. We want to see them empty the clip. So it's a silly critique of LeBron. But then, like, the little primitive caveman in the back of my brain wants to see it too.
No, I get that. I'm a big fan of the mid-range game and the post-up, two elements that are just basically gone from the game now. But when Mike operated in the mid-range area, that was just so entertaining to me. And also Paul Pierce, for example, who's a master at it. I love when people start to create something in that, you know, mid-range area where you have to gauge the entire floor and make a read. Or you have, like, a Tim Duncan type who was just in his prime, an exceptional back-to-the-basket player. Those plays were aesthetically pleasing to me, so I get that. And now I'm sort of missing the entertainment angle a little bit because it's all threes and layups, which can be slightly boring to me personally at some point in time. But, you know, I'm still going to look at the game and go, you know, it's so good right now. Like, quality is
for sure.
Yeah.
That's Mark, why I think my favorite player to watch cook is Paul George, because when Paul George gets cooking, he's pulling those little mid-range shots. Mm-hmm. And him and Russell Westbrook, I mean, it's bad shots, I get it, but I still love it.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard of Joel Embiid? Because he's pretty fun. Oh, assuming gosh. He's healthy.
Here we go again.
Well, no, whatever. No. I could talk Embiid all day too, so I'm here for it. That kid's gonna be a super. He's gonna be a top five player if he can stay healthy. Easy.
Knock on wood.
Don't indulge him, James. Don't indulge him.
No, I'm going to indulge him. I'm going. Hey, we have this whole conversation going about what team could probably push Golden State in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Philly in the next 3 or 4 years is going to be one of those teams. They're going to just be so almost, I don't know how they're going to guard them with when they start getting shooters around Ben Simmons and Embiid and whoever they get this year. It's going to be terrifying.
I'm knocking on every piece of wood in my house. Yeah. all right, guys. So, James, you're in the camp that Warriors are still going to finish this out, presumably in five. Where do you stand? Do you think this is the start? Should the 3-1 jokes, should we get them all in the clip again? Or do you think we need to empty that clip in the next 3 days because this thing's over on Monday?
Look, I said 6-game initially, and remember my reasoning for it? It was to play it safe. Because if it went 5, mm-hmm. it would be like close enough. And if it went 7, it would still be close enough. I played the percentage here. So I'm going to stick with 6. Just because. Okay. And then if it closes out in 5, I'll take the 1-game loss, you know? Just, okay, I was off 1 game. I'll take it. I'm going to stay politically. I'm going to be Switzerland here.
It's reasonable. I mean, honestly, it's crazy how, you know, the Cavs, again, game 3, they have a 6-point lead, 3 minutes left. Like, this series could very well be going back to Golden State. Tied 2-2, and I would feel very differently about it, but because they melted down. James, I'm with you. I picked Warriors at 5 before it started. I'm not going to abandon that now. It feels like, I mean, Steph Curry had what, like 14 points in game 4?
He wasn't good at all.
4 of 13, 2 of 9 from 3. Klay was 4 of 11 for 13 points. You know, Durant was phenomenal as usual. Draymond, despite almost getting ejected, probably had his best game of the series. But I think Curry, Thompson get hot at home, finish this out. Because James, you said it well a couple minutes ago. They've got to have 3-1 in the back of their minds now. I mean, it's a very different situation, but you know, I'm sure between now and Monday, that's going to be the entire conversation.
Well, Durant doesn't. Remember, I mean, the rest of the team does, but that's where you have the luxury of Durant, who was not in that series last year. So he.
But LeBron, LeBron blew a 3-1. I mean, Durant blew a 3-1 lead last year too.
That's
so
true.
It's in the back of his mind too. So it's interesting, man. This is the fact that I even have a sliver of doubt in my head, and I'm even thinking, well, they did the 3-1 last year too, is a testament to how great LeBron James is. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And it'll come out Golden State and like outscore him by 35, and it will be all like, oh yeah, of course.
Right. But I mean, that's the thing, right? I think I picked Golden State in 6 originally too. So I mean, if it goes 6, cool, I was right. But if it goes 6, that's again, I'm gonna tip my hat to the Cavs because I don't think on paper that, you know, but LeBron James is just amazing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the talent deficit is absurd this year, and it really, you know, those first two games, it really looked like the Cavs had no chance in the series. So again, the fact it could have been, you know, if Durant misses that 3, it's probably 2-2 going back. It really is a testament to LeBron. You know, Kyrie, he really redeemed himself he kind of no-showed in the first two games. And despite that last, you know, the last minute play in game 3, the rest of the time he's been phenomenal. Kevin Love too. My God. Like he was a non-factor in last year's finals. He's playing incredibly well. And then Tristan Thompson, we should shout out as well, because he had his first good game of the finals in game 4.
So let me ask both of you guys this. I'm going to ask you guys this. So let's say this ends in 6. And right now, like you said, shout out Tristan Thompson. Kevin Love's playing well. Even Kyrie's turned it around. But I like it ends in 5 or 6. It's really easy to say those guys played okay. But you kind of got to say, well, if they showed up in games 1 and 2, this is a whole different series, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's kind of what separates Kyrie Irving from point guards to me, is that he'll have those games where he just doesn't show up, and then he'll play great like he's playing now. But I mean, they needed him those first two games. Kevin Love disappeared in game 3. You know, it's and LeBron James is a great leader. We know that. I don't know, man. It's easy to think those last couple games, these guys are going to go out, you know, flamethrowing. But those first two games, they just didn't play.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they're going right back to Golden State. You know, they have to win 2 on the road now as well as 1 at home. So it's going to be an incredible challenge for them. I think let's save the off-season talk for Cleveland for next episode because, you know, we don't want to bury them just yet. But we do need to address one report that came out this week. The dirt was barely on the Cavs' grave after Game 3, and then Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer on Thursday dropped a column saying, in free agency, you know, LeBron had, he signed through next season. He's a player option in 2018-2019. So he's widely expected to decline that to probably get one more long-term deal. And Kevin O'Connor saying he is in play as a free agent. He specifically listed the Lakers and the Clippers as possible destinations for LeBron, because as we know, LeBron has a house in L.A. The Clippers he mentioned as a possible team banana boat location. Lakers, he brought up the fact, you know, they've got a lot of young talent. Paul George reportedly wants to go there in 2018 as well. So if they can, you know, package some of the Mozgov and Deng contracts, you know, with a pick or a young player to get those off the books, they could easily create the cap room for both LeBron and George. So, James, are you putting any stock into this report? Do you think LeBron is an actual flight risk in 2018?
The only reason I put any stock into it is because when I heard rumbling the first time, I thought it was BS. I heard the rumblings months before he left Miami, and it's, I think some people that we all follow kind of was like heard their rumors and they put it out. I was like, that's stupid. He's not leaving Miami. I heard rumblings about Kevin Durant to Golden State like almost 2 years before it happened, and I blew it off and I didn't think it would happen. So every time we hear these things, and it's no matter how preposterous they sound, there has to be, we got to take it with a grain of truth, because I mean, it's a possibility. LeBron James could set his roots down in Cleveland and still leave. And sure, the people would be disappointed, but he brought a championship home and he's still doing great things in Cleveland. Now, after hearing him talk on that barbershop show, I don't know if you kind of caught that on, I think it was with the uninterrupted.com. And he was talking about how when he decided to move back, his mom didn't want to come and his family was basically saying, let's not do it because of the whole Dan Gilbert thing. But he said, this is bigger than me. This is bigger than Cleveland. It's bigger than petty beefs. And he wants to do something bigger than his name. So just hearing him talk like that, I can't imagine him turning around in less than a year and a half later going to another city, right? I think LeBron James is kind of coming to terms and is at peace with his legacy. He realizes that winning that championship for Cleveland and then now, you know, playing with Cleveland on the front of his jersey is probably something that can really close out his legacy solidly. He got his rings, he's had his travels, he's had his downtimes, and to be the hometown kid, you know, leading his team. It's crazy that we're saying this because it is definitely the second best team in the league. They just right now look like they won't beat Golden State anytime soon, right?
Right.
So it's, yeah, I think we have to, though, we have to take everything like that seriously because we do know it's a business and we do know that players will look after their own best interest at times. And right now it looks almost like kind of bleak for the second best team in the league.
Yeah, definitely. And as you said, I mean, a lot will, you know, a lot how the rest of these finals go and then what happens in 2018, obviously will determine that in large part. I mean, if the Cavs don't even make the finals next year, if like some upstart, maybe Milwaukee, you know, puts it all together and knocks them off in the second round, then that's clearly going to influence his thinking. Mort, we've been clamoring for Team Banana Boat for years. Are you hoping that the Clippers assemble all their powers next year?
Have we been clamoring for it? That's...
Yeah, I was going to say, who's been doing this clamoring here? Yeah.
For entertainment purposes.
Yeah, so and let me ask both you guys this then. So even now, if this was 2 years ago, I think we'd get a different answer. But is that banana boat team really going to challenge what we see going on in Golden State?
No, right. not even close.
Yeah, Melo's past his prime. I guess you guys probably both seen this. Chris Paul, I respect his game. I guess my thing with him is that I think he's a little bit overrated because he's not like Steph Curry where he's stretching the floor and breaking defenses. He's not like Russell Westbrook where he's so ultra athletic that it doesn't matter his size. And he, you know, Russ has that versatility and that speed and that hops. He's really good, but like against a team like the Golden State Warriors, he's not, you know, you need length. You need that switchability. You need some dynamic kind of dude. And he's not that player. You know what I mean? He's just not that kind of player. So yeah, I don't see the banana boat team doing anything. And I don't know if him going to the Spurs is the answer either. So no banana boat team for me. No, thank you.
No banana boat. Yeah.
I mean, I would like to see it just for the hell of it, because I like reunion shows once in a while. If I have followed a good series like for 10 years and it stops and I'm like, oh, come on, just one reunion show like 5-10 years later. This is it, just for one season, and then they can all go their different paths and or even retire together. That would be kind of epic, like if all four of them just went, you know what, after this season, we're all done. Like, that would be a fantastic.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to be a hypocrite a little bit too, because Hickory High on Twitter. He actually wrote a piece about how the thing for us to do is to find our entertainment and joy over the next couple of years, instead of bemoaning Golden State and saying, oh, it's hopeless. And that's one of those things, right? In the shadow of Golden State, to have the Vanderbilt team do things. And that would be one of those things that would be, would, it's like Russell Westbrook going for the triple-double this season, right? It would be a very fun, intense distraction from, all right, well, we know who's going to be in the finals.
Yeah. No, I mean, 82 games of regular season does add a lot of information and a lot of subtext and a lot of things that you could, like, dig into. I mean, okay, I was a Bulls fan for a long time, so that's not enjoyable for me. That's why I have to switch to something far more entertaining. But, no, I get it. I mean, yeah, you have to figure out what's exciting to you. Like, I look at the Minnesota Timberwolves right now, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do during the summer. That's going to be the team that I'm going to look at really intensely and follow throughout the course of the season. And then, when the playoffs start and you just know who's going to end up in the finals, it's going to be, oh, okay, because it doesn't matter. I got a whole bunch of entertainment and information, whatever you get from the 82 game schedule. So, I mean, I always thought that those complaints were a bit overrated. Like, people are complaining just because they can't complain. They have a Twitter account, they can complain, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, he mentioned the Lakers as one because they have so much young talent, but more your Minnesota thing gets me thinking, like, isn't that the route? If he's going to leave as a free agent, go to, like, Minnesota or go to Milwaukee, where they, like,
Minnesota
Milwaukee with LeBron.
Minnesota needs a four. LeBron can play the power forward. Could you imagine this? You have Towns at the five, LeBron at the four, Wiggins at the three, LaVine at the two, and then Chris Dunn, or maybe, you know, someone else at the one. When it, you know, you can keep Rubio. Like, his spacing issues would be not that severe with LeBron in there, because he would be the primary player anyway, so you probably replace Rubio with a spot-up shooter or whatever. But
there you go. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah, they could sign, like, Avery Bradley next year.
Oh, damn, yeah. Like, Avery Bradley could actually play, like, a point guard, pseudo-point guard Derek Fisher role, because LeBron would handle the ball that much. Yeah.
Avery runs the point when Isaiah sits a lot. So,
that's
he definitely...
That's true. He's gotten better at it. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Or, you know, Milwaukee, too. You put him next to... Between Giannis and Chris Middleton. Like, isn't that the kind of... switchy, rangy defense that you need to stop the Warriors. So
that would be insane. Or just have Bron come off the bench for Giannis, right? Let him be a super sub.
Yeah. That'd be pretty sick. I mean, I'm sure lifestyle factors into it too, and LA is probably a little more enticing than Milwaukee or Minneapolis.
Minneapolis is full of Scandinavians, so representing here. Come on.
He's also used to the Cleveland winters, so it can't be that much worse. Same. It does. Yeah. All right. So, luckily, we don't have to really start considering this LeBron stuff until 2018, but thought it would be fun to discuss.
LeBron,
I will say,
before... by the way.
Oh, God. Oh, please.
Could you imagine, like, the Lakers would just own every headline for at least 3 years?
Hey, you know what?
Because Harbaugh would say, Lonzo. So it's better than LeBron, and then it would just be.
I think Bron might disappear. LeVar, we might just never hear from LeVar again. Because remember, LeVar was talking about Bron's kids already, and Bron already came out.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
hey man, you know, hey, it's all basketball, but that's too far. So yeah, that'd be
That would actually be ideal. I might root for LeBron to go to the Lakers
Hey, let's start the rumor.
Yeah, exactly.
Sources are telling me that putting Fields out to play with Lonzo Ball. How do you guys feel about Lonzo, man? Are you guys all in on him?
Let's seg right to the draft. This is perfect.
So I have this thing, right? When you have a father like that, who is the way that he is, like, I heard every good thing about Lonzo as opposed to LeVar, but I can't help but feel that in some way, when you have a father who, like that, who is so aggressive and so, you know, outspoken and whatnot, that you have an element of that in yourself. Because, like, let's be fair, you take things from your parents all the time. So I'm, like, insanely nervous that if I draft Lonzo, who right now appears to be aces throughout everything, that somewhere down the line he's going to be like, you know what? I just put on this facade so I can get drafted high. So I'm just, I'm much like my dad. Fucking do, you know, pay me, put me on billboards, whatever. I'm really, really nervous about that because I feel like there's something there that we don't know.
I'm gonna defend Lonzo. So I'm not that high on him. I don't see what everybody else sees the star potential. But I did watch his post workout the Lakers interview, his media availability. And I'll say this, the kid kind of won me over as far as personality-wise. He's calm, he's collected, he answers these questions. I mean, I haven't heard him say 10 words before this interview. He talked for 10 minutes. He seems like a really good kid. All accounts, you know, he is a pass first point guard. So he's like not a selfish kind of guy. Doesn't seem anywhere near as chest thumping as and self self-promoting as his father. And I think his dad's such a blowhard, I think, because he wants his kids to have everything he didn't, right? Mm-hmm. He tried to play in college and he wasn't. He had spot minutes in the NFL, right? Then a couple practice teams or whatever. So I think his dad wanted to be a big time athlete and just never made it. And so now he's living vicariously through his son, and he's aggravating. He's aggravating as shit, right? But and also I think maybe growing up in a house like that, those kids don't really take after him. They probably fit around him, as in they're kind of quiet. Their dad gets all the words in, and they laugh and they follow. And you know, he led them in their workouts. So maybe it's instead of taking after him, they compliment him because of that, right? He's that that's large personality that needs people flitting around him, and that was his family. So yeah, I think personality wise, take LeVar out of the equation, I think Lonzo's was going to fit almost anywhere he goes.
That's the hope, at least, right? I mean, I mean, look, I want to believe everything that's been said about Lonzo because it's all been positive. I want to believe that. It's just like, I watch my own son and I see how many things he picks up from my stupid ass, right? And I'm just like, whoops. So I can't help but escape that. Maybe that's more of a dad thing than it is an NBA draft observationalist thing, but yeah. No.
I mean, you raised a good point. I never thought about that. That like maybe 3 years down the road, 2 years down the road, when he's settled in and he already kind of said it, right? They were like, hey, what do you think about the Lakers? And he was like, oh, they're a good young team. They just need a leader. They need a point guard who can lead. And I'm like, dude, Russell's right there.
Yeah.
Maybe you got maybe you got a point there that he's gonna be outspoken and say things kind of brash, I guess. So we'll see.
Like we saw KD. Like, remember when he started out in the league? KD was real humble, didn't really say anything to reporters. Now he's just like unfiltered. I love that, by the way. I love unfiltered players more than I love those who are just like being politically correct. But still, like, there is this transition because they have to get used to the cameras, used to all the attention and whatnot. So I don't know. I could just see it land wrongly for Lonzo, even though I hope he doesn't. I mean, I hope he lands correctly and separates himself from his father's image.
I think KD's a little different. He purposely tries to come off like a kind of tough guy. Mm-hmm. I think KD's is born a little bit out of not insecurity. I don't know what it is, but I think the quiet KD was kind of himself, and now he's pushing himself to be a little more chest thumping and even when he talks to the media, it almost comes off kind of whiny when he kind of snaps at him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and Lonzo, we should note, is he's, because of his dad, he's used to the attention a lot more than KD is. Like, he played at UCLA for a year, so it's not like wherever he lands, he's already been kind of the star, the focal point for a year. Whereas, like, KD at Texas, it's 10 years ago, so I could be misremembering this. But, that season was the Greg Oden season. So, like, KD kind of fell under the radar. It was just like, oh, there's this really skinny kid scoring 30 points a game. That's cool. But,
I remember that 10 years ago, KD was talked about and on SportsCenter all the time because he was flamethrowing.
Yeah.
So I get it. Like, all the talk was – a lot of talk was Greg Oden and Mike Conley and – but no, KD got his, hey, it was a big discussion down the stretch, right? Who's going to one, Kevin Durant or Greg Oden?
Yeah, so. down the stretch it was, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Portland were actually legitimately considering Durant at least on draft day. I seem to remember something along those lines.
And that's then, one of the greatest what ifs ever, dude.
That's rough. So I'm going to note in this Lonzo talk, Bleacher Report's Kevin Ding had a report, I believe, Thursday or Friday. So Lonzo worked out with the Lakers this week, and Ding says he didn't blow the Lakers away or seal the deal. So not that he is out of the conversation, but you know, the conversation is still open. They're still considering Josh Jackson, apparently. He said, quote, to a lesser extent, De'Aaron Fox. And then also they're holding out hope that, you know, the Celtics do something crazy and Markelle Fultz somehow falls to them. So
mark my words, guys. If Boston somehow screws this up and picks Ball over Fultz, I will no longer be a Celtics fan. So I'll be a free agent and we can find another team for me to root for.
You're welcome to the Sixers anytime, James.
Join the dark side. Join the dark side, because I'm there. I am teamless as of this moment. I've been a free agent for a couple of months. No, and by the way, no interest, no offers yet, which is kind of insulting.
Hey, but I'll say this, man. Hey, more the Celtics will take you with open arms, man. We're deep. Yeah, we got talent coming. We have talent there. Fun, hardworking team. Yeah. So that's man. Yeah. I'll send you an application. Sign right up.
All right, James, let's talk about the Celtics for a second, because, you know, Markelle Fultz is obviously the overwhelming favorite to go number one. He worked out for the Celtics this week. It sounds like it went well. There was a report that he's going to work out for the Kings. Seems like both sides are just doing their due diligence, but it would be a major surprise if anyone else but Markelle Fultz comes off the board number one overall. So my question for you, James, is are you clinging to that number one pick no matter what? Or are you willing to shop it for the right offer?
So I guess this is my thing. When everyone killed Ainge at the trade deadline for not moving the pick and not getting Jimmy Butler, not getting Paul George because we were one player away, I think these playoffs have shown that the Celtics are not one player away. Mm-hmm. They would have pushed, definitely they would push Cleveland a lot better with, you know, Paul George or whatever. But they're not beating the Warriors right now. In the next couple of years, they're probably not beating the Warriors. And it's easy for me to say that now because I'm kind of biased because I'm all in on getting young talent, you know, from the draft, young, cheap talent under team control. And yeah, so I'm fine with holding the pick. Now, even if they move the pick for Jimmy Butler or Paul George, I don't think in the next couple of years with Isaiah coming up and all these contracts coming up, Avery Bradley has to get paid. Crowder's already saber rattling for an extension. Is that team – so basically you'd be mortgaging the future to say we think we can contend right now with Cleveland and with the Golden State Warriors and with the Spurs. And while they'd be up there amongst them, just having two MVPs in Golden State is such a game changer that I'd rather play the long game. So I can't think of a deal that would blow me away. I love – maybe the Paul George deal, but I know he's already kind of saying he wants to go to L.A. is what I'm hearing. I don't know why he would want to leave a team like Boston and go to L.A., but if his mind is set, his mind is set. So that would probably be the only deal. I love Jimmy Butler. I think he's right there with Paul George. Just something about his game, I think, doesn't fit as well as Paul George's does in Boston. So
agreed.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, we had Derek Bodner on last week, and we also discussed this, and it came down to, as you mentioned, you know, the team control thing. Paul George, you have him for 1 year, which is great, but he's a flight risk. And if he leaves in 2018, then you just gave away a guaranteed 4 years of Markelle Fultz and most likely 9 years of Markelle Fultz for 1 year of Paul George when you're still probably not going to win a title.
Exactly. So, that's the thing, right? You gotta look at the landscape and say, does this make us, you know, does this give us the 30% chance of reaching the finals and winning? And it doesn't. Just the two dominant teams in the league are just so dominant right now that I wonder if this is infecting all the front offices, right? Where they're moving their timelines out 3-4 years instead of saying, hey, man, you know, we got Karl-Anthony Towns. We got Wiggins. Let's add Jimmy Butler, and we're a contender. And they look at what's happening and say, okay, well, we can hold off on that because there's no need adding so it's really interesting, man. I can't think of a time period when there was a team that was this much better than everybody else or two teams, I guess, and then one team who's just even more dominant than that. So this will be an interesting offseason.
But there's some risk involved, though, in kicking the can down the road. Because let's take Minnesota as an example. Right now they have a lot of cost-controlled assets like Towns, Wiggins, LaVine, and all that. But if you do not at some point before they hit their extension kicks in, like they have to sign them first, obviously, if you don't get a free agent in there, like you utilize your cap space for someone, then you lose out on a huge upgrading opportunity. Because when as soon as the extension kicks in, that's less money to operate in free agency. So from my perspective, you really need to hit the market at some point before all those kids begins to earn those max deals.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but I still get your point. Like right now, you're going for it all. Like you would need to hit a home run. I'm of the opinion that if you're Boston and you're looking to trade the pick, you would need to not make one deal. You need to make two deals, and you need to have one of them lined up before you hit the button on the second one, and that is to get both Paul George and Jimmy Butler. Like, if you can somehow swing that and you end up with Jimmy and PG-13 for next season, then I'm in. Then I see, the reasoning to it. But if you only get one, then I agree with you, James. Then that it's not enough.
Right. And so we keep talking about the math. It's the fact that there's two MVP types and then two All-Stars in Golden State. You really got to beef up your team. So what do you guys think about if they sign Hayward and then trade for Paul George?
Oh. I mean,
issue with that is now you're depending on Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford. Hayward and Paul George are legit. I love Isaiah Thomas to death. The problem is I don't know. I guess he's almost like, he's tiny. He's like a smaller Steph Curry playing with the length, I guess, of the guy. So I guess it can work. But, even Steph is 6'3", yeah. almost 6'4". And it's a two-part question. What do you guys think about the Gordon Hayward and Paul George? And then even with that, say we do that move, is Isaiah Thomas that kind of piece? Is he that kind of player? Can he overcome being 5'8"? And taking the and being part of a team that's next level.
Brian, you go first.
I mean, I would do that deal. I don't know. Actually, no, I don't think I would still. I still don't think I would trade Markelle Fultz for it. I mean, I would side Gordon Hayward if he's willing to come. That's great. That's awesome. Because he's young enough where he can still grow with your young guys as well. Mm-hmm. But I still don't trade Markelle Fultz for 1 year of Paul George because I still... Everything we've heard is like Paul George has basically already signed with the Lakers. It's just 1 year, one year early. So
I guess the question would be, is the culture in Boston and having that kind of team around him after coming from Indiana, is that enough to convince him? Right. And I think I'm with you because when people keep saying about get Paul George in and you just think that your culture will be enough to sway him, that's a huge risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's a huge risk. Even if he comes and plays well and they get deep in the playoffs, and he's like, all right, guys, well, I mean, I kind of told you before you traded for me.
Right.
Guarantees. There's no guarantees. I'm going to L.A. Right. So.
All right, but then you
make it hard. Yeah, like I want to be in a sunny city.
Yeah, but then you make it hard on PG-13. Like if you get that second guy in there, whether that be Gordon Hayward or Jimmy Butler, like then you would have a level of talent, like a team with so much talent that you just know that the media would crucify George for leaving. Like, you would put him in a situation where you tell him immediately, we are going for everything. We're going for the ring. We're going for the title. We're not going for just one. We're going for several. You're a big part of this. Look at the team we've gathered. You are one of the main cogs in this. Like, this is it. If he leaves from that to go to an inferior situation, he is going to get killed in the media as well. So you have to convince him not only that the team is ready to compete and win titles right now, the culture is also there, but you also have to let him know that, we traded for you, we gave up a hell of a lot, we've given you all these guys, this is it, like, we're banking on you and this future. Like, I think that would sway him a little bit, because, come on, I think that would be also a vote of confidence to his ability, like, we're building something around you as well. I mean,
it would, but I see. Would you want to keep a star who, like, you're basically, like, almost emotionally blackmailing to stay?
Dude, yeah, okay, maybe we gave up. Say it, but
we gave up so much for you, and if you leave, the media's going to kill you. You know what I mean? Right. So that's
All right, well, subtext, maybe. Like, you shouldn't tell him. Like, you should, hey, Paul, just letting you know, this is Danny, by the way. We just traded for you. And just so you know, if you leave, we're going to fucking kill you in our press.
I mean, also, would the media kill him, though? Because, you know, now we've been bemoaning the Warriors are so good, and it's unfair that they added Kevin Durant. So if you add, you know, Gordon Hayward and Paul George, and you have Horford and Isaiah Thomas, it's the same thing here. So, like, we can't have it both ways, because then if Paul George leaves to join a Lakers team.
Okay, well, so here's the thing, though. Now that teams are trying to reach Golden State, I think it's different. I don't think they would kill him for trying to make a quote-unquote super team.
Right.
It's you know, now there's actually a giant to be slayed. And I think they'd kill him because they'd say, you know what, he said all he wants to do is win.
Exactly.
He's going to win the situation, and now he's going to Los Angeles? He doesn't want to win. He just wants to get paid. You know what I mean? So I can see both sides of it, though, because, Brian, you're absolutely right, though, because then there would be some people in the media who would just bemoan the fact, oh, great, another super team. You know, Paul George could have made his own legacy in Los Angeles. He could have been the hero of the town, hometown kid, and look what he wants to go do. He's playing for the enemy. You know?
Oh, right. Yeah. So. And I mean, also, you know, the Celtics are in a weird spot right now because, James, you mentioned, you know, they're in that they're clearly good enough to win now. You know, they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. They have Thomas and Horford. We're not getting any younger, but they also have a bunch of young guys, and they have, you know, number one pick this year. They have the Nets pick next year, which is probably going to be in the top five as well. They just drafted Jaylen Brown. You know, it's weird because even if you get a Hayward and a George next year, George is a free agent. Isaiah Thomas is a free agent. Avery Bradley is a free agent. Marcus Smart's a restricted free agent. Al Horford could opt out after 2018-19. So it's not like he's joining. You know, when Durant came to the Warriors, he had the confidence, like, look, I'm under signed long term. Like, this is our core long term. You get Paul George there, it's like, you know, you got a year, but then everyone's a free agent, and we're either going to spend an exorbitant amount of money to, you know, we're going to go way into the luxury tax, or, like, we're going to have to shed some of these guys.
Good point. It's not as quite as solid as it seems. With Isaiah and Avery up, and I heard Isaiah already said he's fine not getting paid this summer. He's gonna wait till next summer to get his money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was really shocked to hear from him.
He should.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, well, one, the cap's gonna go up, but two, I mean, I feel like there's gonna be more desperation. You know, if he can only negotiate with Boston this summer. So Boston, I'm sure, will not offer him the max this summer because they want to preserve cap space. So, you know,
I guess
the Kings are around. The Kings are still a franchise. The Knicks probably aren't going to have their point guard of the future unless they get it in the draft. So bank on some team making a dumb move and overpaying him, giving him a 4-year max.
I guess the problem, the only thing I'm thinking is like financial security, like, sure, if he gets a 4-year 2018, that's great. But, like, you still lost a year of earning power. He's making $6 million this year. Like, I'm just trying to figure out how much did he have to make up for the fact that even if he doesn't get a max this year from Boston, if he got, you know, but you're still getting paid a year early. And let's say something happens, knock on wood, he breaks an ankle this year. He you know, tears an ACL or something. Knock on wood. I don't want to wish injury on anybody. But it's a risk he's taking. It's a gamble, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and he's got that hip injury, right? I mean,
Yeah. So as a Celtics fan, I appreciate it, right? Because he's leaving the cap space and he's giving the team a better free agent. But from his point of view, it's kind of perplexing.
Mm-hmm. So, James, let's go back to Fultz. Let's say they take Fultz. They don't make the Paul George trade. 2018 hits. What do you do with Isaiah? Do you re-sign him? Are you willing to give him a 5-year max?
I wrote this for B-Ball Breakdown about how they already have their star and they should just be ready to pony up and pay him. And I still waffle back and forth because even I did my best to dispel the myth. Look, if I don't tell you his height and I tell you he averaged 28-6, you're like, that guy's an all-star. And he's an all-star. You know? 28-6, performed in the playoffs, 50-point playoff game. What are you telling me? And you're like, all right, you sign him, you pay him. in the reality, though, we're just watching. We're watching this series, and we're watching Kevin Durant turn away guys at the rim and then come down and hit threes. We're watching Andre Iguodala strip players. Length is so important, man. And you know, even Steph Curry, we you know, not a good defender, but you could see, you know, being 6'2", 6'3", and he gets his hand out in the passing lanes, and he comes. That matters. And mm-hmm. when you got a guy who's 5'8", man, you just you put a cap on how good your team is going to be. Because even with Jimmy Butler, even with Paul George, even with Gordon Hayward, that's great. They're having that weak spot because we saw it. Teams can attack him. They can give him force the switches and get him in the post, and they're gonna just attack him. And I just wonder if Boston will ever be good enough to overcome having him on the court. So,
yeah.
My mind says, yes, you pay that kind of asset because even in the next, you know, 3-4 years, that's fine. You can either move him or you just let his contract expire. And that, now Markel and Jaylen Brown take over, and that's, you know, that's how it goes. Or, like, the other part of my mind says, move forward with Fultz, move forward with Smart, pay Bradley his money, and you make do. Because, I mean, the one win they got against the Cavs was without him, right? And mm-hmm. it's team's not better without him, obviously. That's silly to say, but maybe cohesively moving forward as a championship kind of team, maybe there's another option besides paying Isaiah Thomas $27 million. So my mind says pay him, but I would not be too upset if they decide to move on, because I think Smart, Terry Rozier, and Fultz are, you know, enough talent. And hey, that's, I'm actually insane, so I'll just say pay.
I'm with you. I don't think you can build a championship contender if you're paying Isaiah Thomas a 5-year max deal.
Yeah,
I just don't. You know, cap space. It's not a matter of, you know, you've got his bird rights, so it's not like, oh, we can't afford to, you know, have him around. But it's like after you sign him, that's going to limit your flexibility to sign other guys. So, yeah, you can, you know, maybe you build the super team this summer and just retain everyone and spend the $100 million in luxury tax. But if not, then, you know, you can't add anyone of consequence outside of a mid-level exception. So I don't think it's crazy. I mean, it sounds crazy because you're right. It's like, dude's averaging 28 a game. He has a 50-point game in the playoffs. He single-handedly carried you again, you know, against the Bulls especially. But yeah, I mean, it really does seem like, you know, I have repeatedly brought this stat up, and I'm going to do it again. In ESPN's defensive real plus minus, he was the league's worst defender this year. Like, that, you cannot build a team to beat Golden State if you have that kind of a weak link, I don't think.
And teams know it, so that means that his value is going to decrease when they shop him.
Oh, it's funny you guys say that, because what's one of the teams that beat Golden State when they won 73 games? The Boston Celtics, Isaiah Thomas, right? Nah, no. So it's a real thing, man. But then we're dealing with humans, and guess what? I think Celtics fans mm-hmm. would lose it, because he's a big part of that team. He's a big part of that team. So Ainge is in a really tricky, complex situation now as far as the picks, what to do with the future. Who to resign, how much to resign him for, because, hey, Smart's coming up next year too, right? And you mm-hmm. can't keep everybody. Bradley, Smart, Isaiah, you can't keep everybody. Terry Rozier is really a good player, and sooner or later he's going to – I mean, you got a decision to make.
Oh, he's gone this summer, right?
Oh, man. I love the kid.
He's restricted in 2019, yeah, so you still got a little time. But, yeah.
What I mean is he's played 17 minutes a game this year. Like – he's not going to get that amount of minutes with Markel.
Oh, he's saying, yeah, God, that. And this is so many tough decisions to make, man.
Yeah.
So many tough decisions to make. So I think Mort's right. He's got to be gone. I mean, what are you going to do? You're not going to play him 5 minutes a game. Mm-mm. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're not going to play him a whole lot of the two either, because Markel is going to get a lot of 2 minutes next to Isaiah backing up Bradley.
For sure. So now we got Isaiah, Terry, Smart, Bradley. That's 5 guards rotating through 2 spots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's almost it's untenable. Something has to be done here soon.
All right. Boston. So here's my I have a solution. You move Rozier for a later first round draft pick, and you pick a draft and stash guy. Sibley. I mean, then you save a roster spot, but you still have like a guy developing overseas.
We got two of those already.
I know.
We got Yabusele and my man Zizek. So.
Yeah, he's coming over. But then you have another asset down the line. Why not?
Yeah, why not? You're right. It makes sense. And you know what? I know that the Oklahoma City Thunder would love to have a Terry Rozier backing up Russ.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Hey, he would be the best point guard on the Bulls right now. Just saying.
That's true. That is very true. And I mean, Portland's got 3 first-round picks. They're shopping at least one of those.
They already got Shabazz. They got the same. Well, the problem is they got Shabazz. Shabazz is pretty nice, right? Napier, he's all right.
Yeah. How long is he signed for though?
I don't know. Portland. I don't know.
I think.
Yeah, Portland's in its own salary cap hell.
Oh.
Shabazz is only signed through next year, and then he's free agent in 2018. So I guess it doesn't make much of a difference because Rozier is just 1 year after.
26, like in July.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, so. Shabazz?
Yeah.
That's good though. Portland, I've been dropping this truth bomb on people and I want you guys to know it. And people can make fun of me if I was totally wrong. If Nurkic stays healthy, Portland's gonna be hopping up into the top 4 or 5 seeds next year.
I buy that.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been talking a lot about Portland on this pod as well, and we're in love with what they're doing, like from a Josef Nurkic standpoint. It's the salary situation that's really
right.
You two are the first. You guys are the first people who didn't call me an idiot for saying that.
No, I mean, once they got Nurkic, they were incredible. Yeah. They were terrible before they got Nurkic, but they were really good after.
Yeah, they were top 10 offense and defense. Mm-hmm. And I think Dame is going to finally get his due this season, where people are going to stop acting like he's he's just a scorer. No, Dame can play. Dame can play.
Yeah, Dame's really good. All right, let's wrap things up with one more a stupid Kings story of the week. According to ESPN's Chad Ford, the Kings are reportedly trying to package their 2 lottery picks, numbers 5 and 10, to move up in the draft for De'Aaron Fox. So, James, if you're the Lakers and you're sitting there at 2, would you make that trade?
If I'm the Lakers, realistically, sure. It makes sense because I don't think, me personally, sure, they love Ball, I know. At 5 and 10, you can get, say, Dennis Smith Jr., right? You could get Donovan Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
I think both those guys are going to be amazing. I definitely would do it because you could stock up in Los Angeles with the 5 and 10, and you don't, you know, whatever, the Ball hype is just hype to me. For the Kings, I mean, again, my thing with the Kings at 5 and 10, you can get Dennis Smith Jr., you can get Donovan Mitchell, and I think Fox is going to be really good. I don't know if he's going to be that much better than those two guys, you know. So I don't. If that's their guy, the Kings, I think honestly are on the cusp of turning it around for me. The joke that they were, I think I like their young pieces. I really like their young pieces. The only thing that bothers me about them is they have the same front office, which is pretty stupid.
Right.
I worry about them making the right roster moves around these young guys. But, hey, I love the pieces they have right now. They're young. They have nothing to lose. They're going to be fun. They're going to play hard. So, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, they were frisky at the end of the year after the DeMarcus Cousins trade. Like, Willie Cauley-Stein started playing well. Olivisieri started playing well. Sure. Buddy Hield looked really good. The Steph Curry jokes didn't help him. But, he played a lot better in Sacramento than in New Orleans. Mort, if you're the Lakers, are you making that trade?
Wait, hold on real quick. One minute, Brian, hold on. Because I realized I kind of waffled on my answer. I'm supposed to bring the hot takes to this show.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the thing. If I'm the Lakers, I do that deal, no problem. Lonzo Ball, as good as he could possibly be, he might end up being a bust. So Hot Takes Night is here to tell you that's the move for the Lakers to make. They stock up on young talent, and they lose themselves with the pressure of LeVar Ball being in their ear. That's the move it has to make.
Agreed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
Look, here's the thing, though. I actually have De'Aaron Fox a little bit over Lonzo Ball. And I also want to correct myself from last week, because when we spoke with Derek Botner, I said that there was a gap between Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, and the rest of the field. But mm-hmm. what I meant was that is in terms of, you know, how people look at it. That's perception. Like, the perception mm-hmm. is there is Markelle Fultz, there's Lonzo Ball, then there's a drop-off. I don't agree with that. I have De'Aaron Fox over Lonzo Ball. I know a lot of people are nervous about his shooting woes. I understand that. I respect that. I also agree with it to some extent. But I keep looking at that shot form, and I keep looking at the potential that he has as a shooter. Like, he reminds me so much of John Wall. And John Wall was a horrendous shooter coming into the league, but he's like fine now. He's, you know, shooting 35%, hitting 100 threes a year, something like that. That's fine. If De'Aaron Fox could become like that as well, then he is the second best player in this draft to me. So if you get that guy and he lives up to that potential in Sacramento, which I doubt because Sacramento is just, they are so horrible at talent development.
Right.
So that's a shame. But if he somehow, you know, gets over that hump that is the Sacramento Kings development staff, then sure, then that deal makes sense for them because then they have a franchise guy. For the Lakers, you get, you know, Jason Tatum, for example, who sure as hell is better than Luol Deng, and I would personally say could project better than Brandon Ingram, who did not impress me at all during his rookie season. And then again, like Dennis Smith Jr. or Lauri Markkanen. Like, there are so many options. And in this draft, I wrote a piece about this also on FanRag. Like, it makes sense to draft or to trade down in this draft and get, like, a bunch of guys. Because if you move past, like, 10, you could legitimately make a case that everyone from 11 to 30 is, like, scrambled. Like, you could just pick them out, like, in whatever, you know, in whatever order you want. And you could even extend it to maybe 40. It's so deep. Like, just get a lot of bodies in there. And for the Lakers to get two, that's kind of necessary, especially if they want to get Paul George into the fold, because then you can actually tell Paul, you know, we have more guys at our disposal right now. We have more people you can play off of. So why not? Yeah. I'm with James.
I was expecting more resistance, guys. You're killing me here. Because I would do that deal in a heartbeat. Like, since lottery night, my dream has been that for the Sixers. Like, I've been hoping Sacramento fell in love with someone at three, traded both picks to get up to three. And then, you know, because I'm with you. I think, you know, there's not the difference between Fox, Lonzo Ball, Josh Jackson, and then even from the tier, from those guys down to the Dennis Smith Juniors, to the Ntilikina, Aquina, to Malik Monk. Like, I'd rather take my shot with two of them than one of them. Because I'm not sure that, I don't know if Lonzo Ball is going to be a better pro than Dennis Smith Jr. We just don't know.
Yeah.
Possible. Who knows? Yeah. So, well, guys, now I'm worried.
It's right there. You just have to finish your thought. Come on.
I mean, I would do it in a heartbeat if I'm the Lakers or the Sixers. And I think the Kings would be making a huge mistake if they did that. Because, again, De'Aaron Fox might be the second best prospect in this draft. But, you know, at this point, you just need young talent in Sacramento. You need to accumulate as much talent as possible. And it sounds like, you know, all the reports are that no free agent wants to go there again. So you're either stuck overpaying someone or you're left relying on young guys. So at least accumulate the young talent, get them locked into those cheap contracts for 4 years. And then, you know, maybe in 2 years' time, if you show a little bit more organizational stability, you'll be able to land, you know, you're never going to get the top tier guy, but maybe you get like, you know, a Rudy Gay or someone like that, bring him a player of that caliber in free agency.
So just in regards to the Kings, right? This is really important. If they end up sticking with 5 and 10 and they draft two guys, would Vivek Ranadive make two calls where he gets the entire staff online to say that player rocks? Or does he just like make a group call instead and does it one time just to avoid double work?
Valid question. Yeah. And who does he compare? Does Malik Monk get the Klay Thompson comparison right away?
Right,
or
exactly. Like, I want to know this. Like, Dennis Smith coming in, like, if he just right off the bat says, well, Dennis Smith is immediately going to be MVP Derrick Rose. Like, you know,
right.
That's probably where he's at. Yeah.
Yeah. He's athletic like Russ, and he shoots like Steph.
So, by the way, I will share one hot take, right? Because I know you like hot takes.
Yes, please.
And I'm going to go out on a line here, and it's going to be hardcore. I think Donovan Mitchell is going to have a better NBA career than Lonzo Ball.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
I'm with that one.
Ooh. Wow.
I think there's quite a few players I think are going to have better careers than Lonzo Ball. But, yeah, Donovan Mitchell looks like the real deal.
Yeah. I am in love with this guy. Like, he is amazing. 6'3", yep. strong as a bull, 6'10", wingspan, athletic yep. as hell, a strong defender, development. He's a developing offensive player, but that development is going real nice.
Like, he reminds me of a George Hill type. If George Hill was a star,
right? As far yeah. as
he can do everything. He's more athletic, more explosive.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm with you. I think he's gonna be, yeah.
Shooting guard version, like a rich man's version of George Hill in the shooting guard, you know, body. Yeah.
You guys are killing me. Now you make me want 10 even more, because the dream would be like Dennis Smith at 5, Donovan Mitchell at 10, and those two next to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid.
Look, Donovan Mitchell next to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid would be so good, because he is one of those guys who can run the floor all night long, and you know that those guys would roll to the rim. Like, you would get so many transition opportunities. It's insane. And defensively, he would complement Embiid so much, because he is like... When I look at Mitchell, I see a little bit of Avery Bradley to him, defensively speaking.
No, just, interesting.
Yeah, just longer and more disruptive. Yeah. Not more disruptive. That's unfair, because Bradley is really disruptive, but to the same level. Like, he's got that same potential as being a Avery Bradley kind of defender in the NBA.
Oh, my God. Kings, please, 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 Kings. Just don't call him. Brian Colangelo. Just, I'm begging you. You have, I'll DM you. Brian Colangelo's number. Just,
look, the Kings are going to draft Luke Kennard. You know it.
Right. Right. And then, exactly.
And then just because it's Vivek and because Luke is white, he's going to be. That's the next bird, because he's going to shoot.
Probably true. James, do you have any other hot takes, draft related hot takes for us?
I don't think it's that hot to say, but I mean, Malik Monk is going to be a star. I think he's going to be probably one of the best offensive players in this draft. I think, Mark, what's his name? Markkanen.
Yeah, yep. Lauri Markkanen,
I don't like him. I don't like him.
Really?
At all.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I think, sure, the shot looks really nice, but you're a big man who can't really rebound and can't defend. And I don't care what somebody tried to convince me that, I looked into the numbers and his, no, I see him. The guy can't defend, he can't rebound. He's going to be a disappointment. Any other hot, spicy takes? Oh, I would have said Miles Bridges would have been the best player in this draft, but I love Miles Bridges' game. Yeah, I'm probably wrong on that one, but still, the fact, just watching him, I thought he should have been I'm shocked he went back to school. So,
I like that. Yeah. That's a good one. Well, And this isn't even a hot take, because this is probably going to happen, but I have now fully expect Lonzo Ball to be a Sixer on draft night.
No way.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to trade down, and I think Los Angeles, you know, Kevin Ding, again, going back to his report, he was the one who the morning of the 2015 draft broke the news that they were going to take Russell over Okafor, and he's the only one who was reporting it for a long time, and then they did it, so... He's got some really good sources with the Lakers, it seems. And the fact, you know, that column on Friday was all but saying, you know, they're just not blown away by Lonzo. I think defensively, they were so bad defensively last year that I can't imagine they are going to be willing to pair D'Angelo Russell and Lonzo Ball. It seems so, like De'Aaron Fox is their plan.
Could Lonzo, like, legitimately slip?
I don't think the Sixers pass him up. I don't see Brian Colangelo doing it.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, honestly, so I was out on Lonzo the entire time. And then we had Bodner on last week, and he actually talked me into it again. Only because next to Simmons and Embiid, he could be really interesting.
I want you to, that's good. Hold on to that positivity, but.
Oh, no. Please, no.
No, I just want you to, hey, you know, you're one of the smart NBA guys I know. So your original thoughts probably have a lot of merit to them. And Derek Wadner, Derek's persuasive. I'm with you originally. I'm not that. Yeah. I'm not in on Lonzo. And I think I think besides Simmons and Embiid, you'd rather have somebody like a Monk or, you know, somebody who's Monk's. He's gonna be dynamite. Mm. But yeah, this whole thing with Zoe, I don't know. I don't get it. I sound like a hater, so I'll just leave it alone.
No.
Oh,
no, I mean,
man, his vision is so great. Oh, shut up. His vision is great. He played with a lot of really good players at UCLA, and he is a good passer. He's 6'6", and he's a good passer. That's great. He doesn't have high-level speed, high-level shake. He doesn't have high-level athleticism. People keep saying he's a more athletic kid. I'm like, you guys must have not – you don't remember Jason Kidd his first couple years.
No, that was ridiculous. Yeah.
I hate it, dude. Yeah. I hate it. Sure. Jumping higher than Jason Kidd doesn't mean he's more athletic than Jason Kidd.
Yeah. Right? Oh, we're showing our ages right now, James.
So, I mean, hey, for his sake, I hope he turns out and prove me wrong. I'll come on the show and say it. I don't see it, dude. So, good luck. Yeah. Good luck with that, Brian.
I'm still rooting for the Lakers to take him. But, I mean, I do think there's at least a possibility that if he slips, that the trade value of that pick might be more enticing. I could absolutely see Sacramento seeing Lonzo as the star. Mm. And then, at that point, packaging 5 and 10.
Oh my God, Vivek Ranadive and LaVar Ball. I need a podcast. I don't want a podcast with Vivek and LaVar Ball. Come on.
Road tripping with Vivek and LaVar. Oh,
that would be amazing. Come on. Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I'm nervous. Honestly, like 60% of my hesitation about Lonzo on the Lakers is LaVar and Howard Eskin. Like the Philly media is just the worst possible place that you could put Lonzo or LaVar Ball. So I'm knock on wood, the Sixers will trade down and spare me, but I'm expecting to have a very morbid podcast in 2 weeks' time where I'm trying to talk myself into, once again, 2 years after the Okafor pick, I'm going to have to go back to that dark place and talk myself into another Sixers selection on draft night at number 3, even.
I'd be a Suns fan if Boston picks the ball. I'm out of here.
Yeah, the Suns could be frisky next year. All right, James, thank you again for joining us. I want to, you know, we will definitely have you back on later this summer.
I'll be happy to come back on again in 2019. Yeah, I'm back on again. Right. I appreciate you.
When the Celtics get good again, we'll have you back on.
2021. Gotcha.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. And to all of our listeners out there, thank you for joining us. Just a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow. Check us out on iTunes, subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We love any feedback. And check out FanRag Sports at FanRag Sports on Twitter and at FanRag NBA for all of their NBA content. James, can you remind listeners one more time where they can find you on Twitter and all of your work?
Why, thank you very much. You can find me on Twitter at Snotty Drippin. You can find me at B-Ball Breakdown. And this is my stewardess voice. So make sure that you buckle in and gear up for an off-season of fun and thrills. Thank you very much.
Solis. Yes, yes, yes.
You've been listening to... Okay, sorry. Snotty Drippin. Snotty Drippin, B-Ball Breakdown. The Truth Podcast. That's it.
Nice. Yeah. So check James out there. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined by both James Holis and Morten Jensen. Have a good one, fellas.
You too, Brian.